think most people can buy into testing the waters for like 2 to 3 days. So a lot of times I'll suggest that people sort of give themselves a little more adequate nutrition for just 2 or 3 days and journal how they feel those days. Like, there's obviously going to be some conflicting thoughts, but there's no doubt that they will immediately feel a difference, particularly during like exercise or sport.
Welcome to the Run, Thrive, Survive podcast with your host, Sierra Carter. Here we will untangle the madness of our health by understanding our mind in action. We will balance emotional, mental, and physical health every single day. Because some days we thrive. Some days we just survive. But together, here we will run our lives.
Hey guys, it's me, Sierra, here on Run, Thrive, Survive. I'm super excited to be here with you so we can learn how to run our lives without letting life run us. Honestly, you've seen me take a drastic turn in the podcast to doing more things on how we can manage our emotions and our thoughts so we can run our lives. I've gotten a lot of feedback from you guys. Keep it coming. You can message me on Instagram. You can email me, however you want to contact me. If I don't see it, you can keep following up. Sometimes things get lost. I'm telling you right now, like things get lost, spam comes in. There's a lot. So just keep reaching out. But I know a lot of you are extremely receptive on just finding that, digging deep in our minds and understanding why we're thinking what we're doing, because everything has a function. And just really quick, I want to give you, just kind of update everybody that's just tuning in with us here on the podcast. I am in applied behavior analysis, and I also practice ACT, which is acceptance and commitment therapy. I absolutely love both of them. That's what I do when I work with my clients, and it really does help when it comes to our well-being. So I really focus a lot of the therapy in fitness and health, along with managing our emotions and our stress levels and anxiety and burnout. They all go hand in hand. And I really feel like there's a huge part of that that is missing. So that is why I'm also bringing on Stephanie Goldberg. She's a psychotherapist specializing in eating disorders and athletes. So she understands where I'm coming from. There's a disconnect, and it's so important that us active people also have amazing mental health, because therapy only goes so far when it comes to fitness. She's also a certified intuitive eating counselor and a running coach. Guys, she's one of us. One of us. One of us. Stephanie herself is a runner and triathlete and is very passionate about helping people untangle their relationship to food and exercise in order to enjoy exercise for the pure joy of moving our bodies. Yes. And I'm telling you right now, as somebody who has suffered from an eating disorder, which you'll hear here on the podcast, it's really important that you try to reframe the way the stories that you tell yourself around food, and especially when it comes to overexercising to get those calories off that you just ate. That is so extremely hard. We'll dive down into that in today's podcast. But before we get started, I just want to share a quick fit tip with you, or fixed fit tip statistic. And that is, did you know that low levels of physical activity are actually associated with $117 billion in healthcare costs each year in the US? I'm telling you right now, I know nothing about the healthcare system, but I feel like trying to motivate people to be more active in this country might actually help reduce some of the money that we're spending on healthcare costs and maybe help us reallocate it somewhere else. I don't know if the government would do it to somewhere useful, but you know what? Let's just save in one area and see where it goes. Let's hope for the best. But that's pretty insane. $117 billion in health care costs each year, and that's not even accounting for inflation this year. So with that being said, on a more positive note, let's bring on Stephanie so we can really dive deep into understanding our minds when it comes to working out and eating disorders, or just our single relationship with food. Even if you don't have an eating disorder, your relationship with food can be a little bit difficult because today's society doesn't make it easy. So without further ado, let's go ahead and dive on in.
You're tuned in to Run, Thrive, Survive with Sierra Carter. Remember to check back every week for new episodes.
All right, you guys, we are here with Stephanie. Stephanie, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you.
Thank you.
So to get this ball rolling, especially today's topic, I love today's topic. I know I told you a little bit before the podcast, I'm very passionate about this topic. So what are the type of clients that you specifically work with? And like, what kind of, I guess, I don't want to call it problems, but what are we seeing that is like a common trend among these athletes?
So I'm an eating disorder specialist who works with athletes. So a lot of the athletes that I see, and they range from, you know, kids who have college scholarships, which is a very different idea than, you know, sort of, I also work with a lot of endurance athletes in New York or New Jersey who are really competitive about their sport, but it is not how they make a living. Although they're very attached to it. But so a lot of the people that I work with end up coming to me through either doctors, physical therapists, maybe some dietitians who are under fueling and having a lot of consequences of that. Either we'll say they have disordered eating and they're not eating enough, or it could be what's like considered a full eating disorder. A lot of the times, you know, when they come to me, they've suffered a few bone fractures, or they know that they're struggling mentally with, I know I need to eat more and I can't seem to do it, or I feel really consumed by how much I want to exercise, that kind of thing.
Right. And now, like, when you're working with these athletes, like, when they come to you, are they willing, or have they been, I guess, kind of pushed by friends and family to maybe get help, or are they recognizing that their behaviors are maybe not the most healthy thing in the world?
I'd say 95% of the folks that come to me are willing, right. Mostly because I don't generally work with adolescents anymore. When I was younger and adolescents wanted to work with me more, they sometimes were forced. But I don't see that as much with adults.
And then we talk a lot about intuitive eating here on the podcast. And I know that's going to be something like when you work with your athletes, that's something that you kind of not push them to, but you teach them. What is intuitive eating to you? Because I think every time I've brought somebody on the podcast here, we give a little bit of a different description of it, which I think is kind of interesting. Everybody seems to have a little bit different definition for intuitive eating. What is, I guess, in your mind, or the actual definition of intuitive eating?
Yeah. So I am an intuitive eating counselor certified by, at the time that I did it, the only place, which was like through the founder, one of the founders of intuitive eating. I feel like the definition of intuitive eating as it was intended is like a set of 10 principles that allow someone to live freely and be sort of intuitive with their food needs. And then it does, you know, in its core, it stays to those 10 principles. I think now it's much more popular, which is great, but that's probably why people have all sorts of different definitions. I tend to subscribe to the idea that it is about living a fully satisfied and free life with food, with one's relationship with food. And then I think that sort of translates to everywhere in someone's life.
Yeah, no. And why do you think people have such a hard time kind of transitioning over to it?
I think there's a lot of fear around food. I think we're all conditioned to be really fearful around gaining weight. There's a lot of fat phobia in the world. Oh. So I think that people are afraid because people aren't, particularly women, but people in general aren't really given the opportunity to like lean into their own desires. And I think that's one of the best things about intuitive eating. You have a desire for something, go ahead, satisfy it.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. Like, so with going back to your athletes. So with the endurance athletes, I feel like I told you before, I'm one of these people that I got into endurance sports because I wanted to lose weight. And yes and no, that's a good thing, not a great thing. But at the same time, like, what are these people struggling with when it comes to switching from what they're doing now
to switch into intuitive eating or like fueling themselves, because I'm sure like they're fatigued, they're not enjoying life. Like what does it look like from when they talk to you to when they start to really help themselves?
Yeah, I will say this is interesting because intuitive eating with athletes is a bit different than like intuitive eating at its core, because we know at a certain level of athleticism, you do need to actually pay attention to how much you're getting and making sure that that's adequate enough. What a lot of people don't know is that one of the founders, Evelyn Triboli of intuitive eating, she was actually like, she was an Olympic trial runner. Like she was an athlete, and intuitive eating absolutely works for athletes, but it does need to be a little more, let's call it specified, to make sure that one's meeting their needs. Like, for example, I don't think anyone wants to really take enough gel any time in their life, let alone like in the middle of a run, but we know we need to. So I think one of the, I mean, I think the same problem with intuitive eating for athletes is the same problem most folks struggle with, is like, I'm going to gain weight. And then I think for athletes that place, like it's going to make me slower, or no one else on my team eats like that. How could I eat like that? A lot of the sort of same cultural messaging, but in almost like a condensed way that they're spending a lot of time with people who have a lot of out of date ideas.
How do you help them pass that? Like the I'm afraid of getting fat. I'm afraid, you know, I'm going to be bloated, or I'm not going to be able to perform, or I have to meet a certain weight. Like, how do you get past that? Because it's one thing to say, oh, they're going to worry about it, but what do we do about that?
I think it depends on the person. And again, like I'm in a position where when a lot of people come to me, they do have some awareness that something is wrong. So, one of the people I'm working with right now, quite a competitive runner, really high mileage per week.
It's rough.
It's
hard on your body.
It is. And when she came to me, actually, what her biggest thing was is like, I'm not present anywhere I am because I'm always concerned about what I'm eating. So even if I'm out to eat with my friends, I'm thinking about like, can I be eating this? Should I be eating this? Is this good? Is this bad? So I think using people's own ideas about what they want their life to look like, whether that's their internal world, or for some folks who are so rigid they don't go out to eat, it could be like what their external world, what they want that to look like, is a really good place to start, because that's going to be their biggest motivator. Like, I think most people can buy into testing the waters for like 2 to 3 days. So a lot of times I'll suggest that people sort of give themselves a little more adequate nutrition for just 2 or 3 days and journal how they feel those days. Like there's obviously going to be some conflicting thoughts, but there's no doubt that they will immediately feel a difference, particularly during like exercise or sport.
Yeah. And I think that's the reinforcement right there, where I had to switch my mindset from I'm working out because I'm punishing myself for either overeating or eating at all. Like, I think it got that bad where it's just punish yourself for ingesting some kind of food, to, oh, I'm going to fuel my body. And look, my running, my pace is going to get better. Like, I'm going to feel great. I'm going to run longer. But getting to that point is so hard.
Yeah. I think, you know, one of the things I believe as a therapist is that like once we can make a conflict conscious, that's the way that we begin to work on it. So again, like I have the benefit of people already coming to me with some kind of struggle, because no one wants to live in a conflict. And I think when people are generally becoming more educated around like, yeah, I do need more fuel. I should be taking in something on my runs or bike rides or whatever. So I think allowing someone to exist in that conflict for a little while can be helpful, because then they can find a way out of it too. So it's like bringing a lot of this to the conscious awareness.
Do you think social media has helped or hurt that?
I guess it depends on what your feed looks like.
You are right. kind of goes both ways. But yeah. I guess when it comes to kind of bringing awareness to eating disorders, bringing awareness to like even like the nutrition that you need on a run, do any of your clients kind of like bring this up where it's like, well, I follow so-and-so on Instagram and they do this, or I'm trying to do this training plan and they do this. Do people struggle with that?
Yes, a lot. I mean, one of the things I love doing with people is the only kind of detox I really believe in is like a social media detox. Like, let's cleanse all of the things that have you questioning stuff that you do that you either chose because you thought that was a good choice for you, or like, let's cleanse all the pages that make you feel bad about yourself, feel like you're not doing enough, put you in a comparison trap. So I think, and then also just like fully, I always use these words because I think people can buy into them, like a social media cleanse where you just don't go on social media for some period of time.
And you know how hard that can be though? That's almost harder than telling me to eat more if I don't want to eat.
It is. Yeah, no, it's hard.
So I let me ask you this, because when it comes to eating disorders, a lot of it is sense of control, and like athletes, like, ooh, we love control. We love to know where we're at. We love the data. Strava's our best friend, especially for runners. When we're using our running as like almost like, I guess, a way to pull ourselves away from a problem, how can you change running from that avoidant behavior into something that's healthier for you? That's something that's going to get you, bring you towards your goals, not a therapy session.
I love that question. I guess, you know, if you're using running as sort of your only outlet, it doesn't become a positive relationship because it becomes something that you need. And you can't always have, you can't, you know, get up from a work meeting and go for a run to get over your anger at your boss. Right. So, I think to your point of like, how do we bring it back to what our goals are? People have to define what those goals are. Yeah. And one of the things I always recommend is like, what are your intrinsic goals? Is it to feel less anxious, to feel more connected to your body? Because those you can generally find on every single, for example, run, right? Like you can come home and check with your mood, with your body state, those kinds of things. And I also think if it's a negative relationship, sometimes stepping back and allowing yourself to miss what you started running for or what other benefits you were getting is a really helpful, productive thing to do.
At what point, I guess, what would you tell somebody? Okay, if you're talking to somebody, what are some like key red flags that they're using running as like an avoidant behavior and like, oh, this is my therapy, not even just joking around, like I need this to stay sane, because I feel like at a degree we all need something to be like, I'm here. But like, what are the red flags for somebody if they're just having a conversation with you that you'd be like, you know what, I think you need to look deeper into this?
One of the biggest red flags is how much it controls your life. So if it affects your relationships, affects your ability to like participate in whether it's like work events, family events, things with your friends, and you sort of put that before everything, I think that's a big red flag, like lack of flexibility. Whether that's lack of flexibility within like the week, the day, struggling with a rest day is one of the biggest red flags. Folks who don't take rest days. And I think they know that because they're kind of on this hamster wheel of like, I need to do this to stay sane, to your point. So that's one of the biggest red flags. Also, I think when it becomes someone's one and only identity, that's a big one. And that's a hard one to work with, but it's a big one.
And you know what? I think this is a good point of where social media has not helped in that situation.
Yes.
Because if someone, you know, they have millions of followers because they're a runner, they run marathons or, you know, these ultra marathons, and everyone knows them as the runner. And what happens if they get injured and they can't run?
Yeah.
Like,
right.
That's a whole spiral outside of like even worrying about eating or anything. That's a whole spiral right there. It's horrible.
It is horrible. Right.
So let me ask you this. Okay. So on the topic of eating disorders and running, when we watch like Boston, when we watch New York, they're usually, and I mean, needless to say on the podcast, they're usually stick thin. And when you look, watch them, they look like antelope prancing across the roads with not a care in the world. When it comes to runners, do you get a lot of clients that are like, I need to lose weight because I need to be faster. I need to be this way. I need to be skinny just to become a better runner. Do you see that often?
Mm-hmm. I do. I mean, I think to your point, you know, if you look at any professional in any sort of field, like someone's generally doing a lot more than the average person has time for, the average person has capacity for, whether it's like, or money for, you know, a lot of times sponsored athletes, like it's also in their contract that they need to run a certain amount, but they have a coach who's helping them do so. So I think when I work with people around that, I think a lot to myself, like, okay, how do we help them transition from the goal of I want to be a faster runner to, again, something that brings us joy? Because being a faster runner is an extrinsic goal. It's an outside goal. And so I do a lot of work around the challenge of like, why would that be more enjoyable to you? Why is that important? Yeah. Have you tried doing other things that might make you a faster runner, even at your weight right now? Because I also think there's a lot of magical thinking around like, I'm just going to lose weight and be faster, which is not true. You don't just like wake up a faster runner the next day.
It's so true. They're like, oh, if I lose 10 pounds, like I'll be lighter to run down the street. And if your muscles can't support it, it's not going to work. So what are those other things that can help runners be faster? I think we've talked a little bit about these on the other podcasts, but it's always open to what are your ideas or what have helped you become a better runner?
Yeah. So interestingly enough, on the side, I do some run coaching also. And so I'm about to say what might sound like the most obvious thing is like speed work helps people be a faster runner, like, you know, sort of a structured program. And right. I also think the thing that is really not intuitive for most people is slow running helps people be a faster runner.
You know, that one's becoming a big thing that I feel like that's starting to take off. Like it used to, nobody heard about it at all. Like it would just wasn't even on the radar for a long time unless you had a coach, but it's starting to become a bigger thing on social media. And it's interesting. I've seen it a lot more. Somebody coined the term sexy pace. Have you seen that?
I have seen that. Sexy pace
is it's like that slow, like I can talk, I can take pictures and videos of myself while I'm running. And it's kind of interesting because it's like, it's brought to everybody's attention. Let's kind of just slow down the pace and maybe I'll run better. And it's such an interesting topic.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because also we think about like load on your body and, you know, sort of endurance, and you can't get faster doing the same thing over and over. So you need to sort of have those different paces so you know when to push your body and your body can get used to running on tired legs, all of those things. I always tell the story of when I was like really in a disordered place. I used to run. I knew to run slow a long time ago, but I always struggled with it. So my friend made me a shirt that said like, it's my zone 2 day. So that like, if I was running, I didn't have to feel bad that I was running slow because everyone knew, I don't know who I thought was paying attention to me, which is every problem. But now it's like, I think back to that and like how absurd that I was so concerned with what other people, again, I don't know who these other people even were thinking about. And now I'm like, oh, it's my slow run day. I can't wait. I can, you know, chat with a friend or listen to this podcast I've been, you know, wanting to hear, whatever it is.
Yeah. No, it's funny. We're all the same way though. Like if I'm running slow, I'm sitting here thinking like, I got to speed up before someone sees me. And I'm thinking, who's going to care? Who's going to care right. how fast I'm going? These bikers don't care. They're flying past me.
Right. They probably don't even know.
No, they don't know. And I think the biggest thing, somebody said at one time, they said, if somebody passes me when I'm running, I'm assuming that they're not going as far as I am because they're running faster. And I was like, I guess that's true to a point, unless I'm going 2 miles.
Right. So, well, or just like, I think, you know, one of the best things that we could do as athletes too, is just accept where we're at and create reasonable goals around that. Like, I have a really good friend who's a really, really fast runner, like Olympic trial hopeful. And see them running, I'm just like, I'm not built that way. I'm not built that way. I don't structure my life that way either. Like, this person's very, very structured. And goes to bed like the same time, you know? And so I always think like, well, I don't know what their situation is, but I know what my situation is and I feel like I have good balance. Right. So here I am.
Mm-hmm. How do you, I guess, okay. So I'm going to ask, cause I've been working a lot with like different, I guess, or the topics brought up personality traits. What are the type of personality traits that you see a lot that are one, athletes, and two, that are struggling with disordered eating? Or some sort of umbrella under the disordered eating?
I think something that can be a precursor to disordered eating a lot for younger girls in particular, but probably boys too, it just presents differently, is sort of like perfectionism and needing to feel highly in control. And it's interesting because as an adult, we could say type A personality.
Right.
I'm also an Ironman athlete and like, I have never met an Ironman who's not pretty type A. I think probably because it takes a lot of time and a lot of details.
I was going to say these endurance. I guess these endurance events, you have to be married to that training. So you have to be committed. You have to be on top of it. If you're not, you're going to suffer.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's one of the biggest, and I think it's a challenge because you have to let that go in order. Particularly with intuitive eating, because intuitive eating is all about flexibility and in some ways spontaneity, like being able to eat and tend to hunger or, you know, being able to organically have something with someone and not think about it requires a lot less rigidity than someone who is highly controlled. So I think that would be the biggest overlap that I can think of.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. Intuitive eating, you're almost kind of, not truly, but you're almost giving up that sense of control, which I can see absolutely is a very, very hard thing to do. Like that structure's gone and you're just kind of listening to your body, but you have to almost find a way to structure around that. But I feel like even that too kind of gets rigid.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting though, because as you said that, I thought, you know, that's somewhat true and then somewhat not. You know, like I'm a mom, so we eat dinner at the same time every night because my kids otherwise, my kids are young, so they will melt down. They generally, again, naturally kind of wake up the same time every day and we have breakfast the same time. So I sort of am pretty structured within that, although there's flexibility around like, what are we eating for dinner tonight? What are we going to have for breakfast when we wake up? So I think flexibility and structure can coexist, but again, there needs to be less rigidity and less planning.
Right. And I mean, like, I even know from when I was struggling at the time, I would lose my mind if I didn't have a meal plan or I ate outside of it or something happened in my day. Like it was, I would like mentally crumble. And, you know, looking back on it, I'm like, how did I not be able to handle some of these things that were thrown at me? But it's like, I couldn't handle it. I crumbled if anything went wrong. So it was like a full sense of control at that time.
Yes. Right. And I think that's some of the stuff. Like one of the things I do with people right away is have them write a list of all their rules, some things they don't even recognize as rules. And then we can chip away at some of those, like what you're talking about.
That's such a good one. Write down the rules. Oh, we don't even realize how many rules we create for ourselves that, you know, don't even need to be created. Like, where did we even get some of these? Social media. That's where we find it, on social media. So kind of wrapping up towards the end, before we get into the last final questions, what would be, I guess, not the biggest piece of advice, but what would be something that you want to give the listeners to think about? Like maybe they are struggling with something. Maybe they need to deeper dive into either an eating disorder. Maybe it's like the way that they're structuring their workouts and using them as therapy sessions. What is one like big question that they can ask themselves or piece of advice they can walk away with?
So I guess I have two. I'm going to.
Yeah, you can give two. You can give three.
So... One is, what are my other emotional regulation tools? How else do I sort of cope with emotions? So that's a good thing to think about. And how do I create that if I can't think of any? And then the other big challenge I ask people is like, are your food and exercise divorced? Because that needs to happen. So again, obviously, like, sure, you're training for something you need to fuel during it, but are you attaching what you're allowed to eat or when you're allowed to eat around exercise? Because that's, you know, how do you work towards divorcing those two things?
That is such a good one. I'm going to have to ask myself that one because I still think I merge them together. It's just something that's hard. You just have to keep working at it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess my final question to you, have you ever struggled? I thought about this earlier in the podcast. Have you ever struggled with any type of disordered eating and running? Because you're in two very specific niches where I feel like maybe there's been something in the past.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. That's sort of, why I'm so passionate about this, is yes, I had REDS. I've had 13 bone fractures in my life. So like pretty serious struggle around that. That took a lot of healing for me to do.
It does. It takes a while. It does. But yes. I'm so glad that you're in this field. All right. So going on to our final question around, this is fun. This is all about you, things that you like that you do. So I first want to ask you, okay, this is a fun question. If you could only listen to one artist the rest of your life on your runs, what would it be? Music artist.
Beyonce.
Do you like her new album?
I love it. Yeah.
It's a pretty good album. Pretty powerful, actually. All right. Question number two. Okay. Scenario. If you trip in a race and it's right at the finish line and everybody's watching, it's like one of the world majors, what do you do?
I get up and I finish the race and I probably like laugh at embarrassment at myself. And I sort of think to myself like, oh, I know my husband's going to make fun of me forever for this. Like there's no regretting. I'm sure there's going to be no forgetting that in my life. But if I laugh it off.
You most likely have videos of it. You know, I'm sure the photographers got you at the finish line, everything that you can remember it. All right. Yep. Question number three. What is your favorite go-to race meal? I feel like this is an appropriate one for this podcast.
Yeah, I'm a big burger and fries girl.
Oh, I'm so happy that you admit that. Nobody ever admits that. I'm the same way. I'm like steak and potatoes, burger and fries. Like those are my favorite things.
Yeah. Yeah. I eat a lot of burger and fries, particularly in like when I'm in season training.
All right, good. I don't feel so bad. I'll just tell people I'm training now. I'm training.
Well, I eat them all year round, but I like crit. But to your point, we talked about this earlier, but maybe it was like off the record. I eat a lot of meat because I feel like I can tell when my iron's low.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Meat. So necessary. And I think I preached that on this podcast. Like, I'm not a huge fan of like when people are like, oh, vegan runners. I'm like, I almost died. So I'm going to go with eat steak, eat burgers, ground beef. I don't care what it is. Eat meat.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm right there with you. All right. Question number four. What is something about yourself that you wish people knew about you?
Oh, that I wish people knew about me?
Makes you think, right?
Yeah. I'm really extroverted. And so I think people often mistake that for being really self-confident. And I think that I was talking about this actually funny enough.
That's awesome.
On my run this morning with a friend. That like just because someone's extroverted doesn't mean they're not also like self-conscious or insecure.
No, it's so true. They're so true. And I feel like, I don't know how it's happened, but it's been through social media. If you're extroverted, people label you as narcissist at like right away. And you're like, that's not true though. That's not how I am.
Right.
Absolutely. Right. All right. And the final one. So my slogan is run your life before life runs you. In what ways or routines or habits do you have that allow you to run your life so life doesn't run you? What are those habits and routines?
I am an early morning person, even on the days that I'm not training, because I like some time alone. I like some time to start my day. Again, I do have kids, so there's like some necessary sort of time that I get that I feel like I'm in control where I start my day the way I want. Most days, however, I do like to exercise in the morning. I think it clears my head. It just gives me a base for my day. And I'm really good at sleep hygiene. Like, I am in bed, lights off, that is off. If I'm reading, I'm on a blackout screen. So I think my nighttime
routine is my routine. No, I'm right there with you. I have a very strict nighttime routine. I feel like kind of make fun of me for it. I'm like, I don't really care.
Exactly.
I need it to sleep, so that's awesome. Well, Stephanie, if when people want to work with you, where can they find you?
So my website is Intuitive Psychotherapy MIT. There are some other amazing clinicians also visiting at my practice. And if you want to follow along or get in touch with me on social media, you can follow me at Intuitive.
Awesome. Well, Stephanie, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, and I'm wishing you the best.
Thank you. You too.
Well, you guys, that's all I have for today's podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it's helping you solve those everyday little problems. And I also hope it's challenging you and helping you become mentally, physically, and emotionally stronger, just like we want to do here on the Run, Thrive, Survive podcast. Please make sure you are subscribed to the podcast wherever you listen to that podcast and leave that review.